Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about creating new realities. And there's nobody I can think of more who has outlined what that's all about than my next guest, Joe Dispenza, Dr. Joe Dispenza. He's a neuroscientist, a lecturer, author, and expert on the brain, mind, and human potential. And he spent decades studying the mind and gathering information on why we perpetuate the same patterns over and over again. His latest book is called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. He's also been featured in the movie What the Bleep. He's a good friend, teacher, mentor, and a very decent human being. Welcome, Joe, to the program.
Happy to be with you, Alan.
You know, this book comes on the steps of Evolve Your Brain. So it seems like in the Evolve Your Brain, you laid out the science of what it means to change the brain, and now in this book you're taking us through the process of actually changing the way we think about reality. Would you sum it up that way?
Yeah, I think people who read Evolve and saw What the Bleep or came to one of my lectures, I think the most common question that I heard from all of that is, that's, you know, really good information, but how do we do it? You know, how do we change our mind? And how does the process take place? So Breaking the Habit is really the companion book to Evolve, and it gives people the tools to begin to make measurable changes in their life and to practice to see if they've changed something inside of them, the way they think and feel, if it produces some result outside of them. And it's based on the workshops we've been doing pretty much around the world for the last 6 years, and we've gotten some really great stories about people using this method to take a giant leap towards change.
So, I mean, it's been shown in quantum physics and all the kind of spiritual workshops people have been doing, is that when you change the inner realities, the outer realities change, because what we see out there is based on what we're projecting from in here.
That's a great way to start. I mean, quantum model of reality says that, the environment is an extension of your mind. Well, if we truly change our mind, there should be evidence in our life. Now, if we wake up in the morning and we do the same things and we go to the same places and we see the same people and we live by repeating the same patterns, then we could say that if the external environment, the outer world, that's turning on different circuits in our brain, causing us to consciously and subconsciously think equal to everything in our life. And as long as we're thinking equal to everything that's familiar and known to us, and we believe that our thoughts have something to do with our destiny, then we'll keep creating the same reality over and over again. So does the environment control your thinking, or does your thinking control your environment? And neuroscience says that we can change the brain to begin to look like an experience has already happened. And so, can we believe in a future that we can't see or experience with our senses yet, but we've thought about enough times in our mind that our brain has literally changed to look like the event has already happened? And can we emotionally embrace a future reality that exists as a potential in the quantum field and begin to teach the body emotionally, condition it emotionally, to begin to feel how it would feel before it happened, so much so that we literally signal new genes in new ways, so the body begins to change ahead of the actual environment. Now, when the brain and body are physically changed to look like the event has happened, when mind and body are changed in some way, you're in a state of being. And when you're in that state of being and there's physical evidence that the event has already happened, hang on, because this is when the event will find you, and it'll come in a way that you least expect, that will always surprise you and leave no doubt that what you did inside of you produced some result outside of you. And when you pay attention to what you did inside of you that produced that effect outside of you, you'll pay attention, do it again, and you'll begin to go quantum.
So a couple of comments on that. I mean, as you're speaking, all these questions come to me. I guess the first one is, why is it always unexpected the way the events show up? Because if they do show up, sometimes we don't recognize them. That's one element of what you just said that I'm questioning, is how come it doesn't show up the way we think it's going to show up if we've already programmed our brain to create it a certain way?
Right. Well, there's a delicate dance, Alan, that takes place between intention, which is getting really clear on what we want, and surrender, which is giving it up to a greater mind. And if we can predict how the event's going to happen, then it's nothing new. It's something that we already have wired in our brain. When we begin to understand that we're in a really nice interaction with the field, and the field will always organize events in a way that is right for us, but that surprise, that quantum moment where it came out of nowhere and you could never predict it, that begins to allow us to move into unknown experiences. And as long as we're having unknown experiences, we're creating unknown emotions, new emotions that lift us from our past, because emotions are a record of the past. So as we begin to create new experiences that then begin to create new emotions, we're literally completing our past in a sense. So if we can predict it, it's nothing new. It has to come in a way that is surprising and alarming and wakes us up from this dream so that we begin to become tickled and overjoyed. And that's when we move into really what I call the natural state of being, where you're excited for life instead of, you know, dreading it and worrying about some worst-case scenario.
Right. You get to be full of wonder. It reminds me of the Greek philosopher's saying, Heraclitus, he says, expect the unexpected because it's difficult and hard to find.
Exactly.
So, I mean, what you're saying, though, is, I'm interested in this because I really feel it's the core of what I'm trying to do with new realities is when we live in the unknown, the question is we don't have any neural net wiring for the unknown. So whatever's coming to us is changing our brain within the presence of our beingness, right? So, I mean, it's different than breaking the habit of being yourself. You're saying use your thoughts to project something new as possible there. And then you're also saying now, well, there's no way to project a new future when you're dealing with the unknown. So, I mean, those are two different positions. Am I right in what you're saying?
No. Actually, they're actually in Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. I always said in that book that you can create anything, you can create what you want, but how it's going to happen and when it's going to happen should not be your concern. Because when we live limited emotions of survival, you know, when we live by stress and we live by anger and aggression and fear and unworthiness and insecurity and hopelessness and powerlessness, when we live by those limited human emotions, we always try to control the outcome. We're always trying to force an outcome and make it happen the way we think it should happen. That's when the ego is in control. What I'm saying is when you create something, there's an element where you feel connected to something greater. You trust in the unknown, and you don't know how it's going to happen or when it's going to happen, but you've experienced it so many times, you just know that it is going to happen, and your job is to live your life in that state of being, in the anticipation of the unknown showing up. But if you live by the selfish emotions of survival and stress, we're defining reality by our senses. We're always trying to figure out the future based on the past. When we're in that moment of creation where we're living in the present moment, we would never try to figure out how it's going to happen or when it's going to happen, because the moment we do that, we return back to the old self and the old way of thinking. The new self would never do that. They're too busy being it.
I find I'm actually slipping into a pattern myself when I surround myself with my technology. I'm always on the email, listening to my, with my iPhone, and technology starting to define me. I realize I have an identity crisis when I'm not around my electronics, and I just realized that in thinking about your book that I need to create something else that is not limiting me into a conditioned aspect. How do we do that? How do we have the, you say in the book, we create a focus on a direction we want to head in. That's what you're saying.
Well, the book, the basic premise of Breaking the Habit is something very simple. It says your personality creates your personal reality. And your personality is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. So the present personality who's listening to this radio show has created the present personal reality called their life, which means then if you wanted to create a new personal reality, then on a fundamental level, you would have to change your personality. You would have to change the way you think, the way you behave, the habits you've memorized, and the emotions that you live by. And I think the biggest problem with most people is that they try to create a new personal reality as the same personality, and it doesn't work. So the model of change that is pretty much the basic biological model that works very tightly and closely along with the spiritual model is really unlearning and relearning. It requires breaking the habit of your old self and reinventing a new self. It requires what we say in neuroscience, pruning synaptic connections and then sprouting new connections. It requires unmemorizing emotions that we really, really memorize in the body and then reconditioning the body to a new mind or to a new emotion. It requires changing the energy from the past literally to a new energy of the future. And so if we sat down and we began to look at the thoughts that we think on a daily basis that really undermine who we really are or who we want to be, the behaviors that we demonstrate and the emotions that we live by, then that old personality typically is connected to a past reality. And we can't go to a future, a new future, holding on to the past. It's impossible. So we have to literally change the brain and body to be ahead of time. And the biological and neuroscientific model says it's possible. So a lot of people will become addicted to technology because there's a release of dopamine in the pleasure centers of their brain when they check an email or when they're playing a video game or doing something. There's a release in the pleasure centers of the brain to make a pleasure chemical. And in the absence of that redundancy, a person experiences a little emptiness. So they begin to use something outside of them to regulate how they feel inside of them. And the moment we do that, we always pay attention to what caused us to change inside of us, and we do it again. And that's how we begin to create habits and addictions. The real key, then, is to look at that emotion you're trying to change and begin to say, I don't need anything outside of me to do this. Let me begin to look at it and pay attention to how I think when I feel this way. Let me look at how I behave and the choices that I make, the habits that I demonstrated to try to make this feeling go away. And what other emotions are generated from this emotion when I don't get that feeling to go away? Because really, in the end, who you really are inside of you is what you take with you. So most people try to use something outside of them to really change how they feel inside of them. And that's when addictions begin to happen.
So, I mean, you're really taking a spiritual perspective, and I know you do, meaning that the self, the being that is changing, is not the personality, of course, but it's something that maybe we could call a divine emanation that is here to in a way, to own the human experience. That's how I define it. So changing, breaking the habit of being yourself, you expand the consciousness of one's being to incorporate more divine aspects. I mean, I know that's not scientific, but would you agree with that interpretation?
I would, and I would say that, according to the quantum model, the atom is 99.99999% empty space. It's nothing. It's energy. And 0.00001% particle, matter. And there's been enough experiments in quantum physics that show that particles somehow are correlated or entangled in a field of information beyond time and space, that somehow the particles, photons, electrons, are all connected. And when you do something to one particle, it has an effect on another particle, and it could be on the other side of the universe. And it happens simultaneously, which means it's happening faster than the speed of light. So the quantum field, then, is a field of connectedness that is really an information field that's beyond our senses or beyond time and space. And because we're made up of atoms and subatomic particles, then pretty much all of us are a projection of information from the field. Now, when we learn new things, we make new connections in our brain. When we have experiences, that enriches the brain neurologically and causes networks of neurons to organize themselves. When the experience happens, our senses interpret the environment, and then at the end product of that process where gangs of neurons organize themselves, the brain releases a chemical, and that's called a feeling or an emotion. Now, here's the problem. We have experiences in our life that brand us neurologically and chemically, and when we react to those conditions in our life, those emotional states, if we don't know how to control the reaction time, they will elongate into hours or days, and that'll be called a mood. You say to someone, why are you in a mood? Well, this thing happened to me 5 days ago. But what they're really saying is they're living by the same emotional reaction, and they're in reinforcing the chemicals from that experience. If it turns into weeks or months, that's called a temperament. You say, why is that man so angry? And you ask him, why are you so angry? And he says, well, this thing happened to me 9 months ago, which really means then they're living by the same emotion connected to the past. And if you keep it going for years on end, that's called a personality trait. So for the most part, most of us then, personality-wise, are living in the past because we memorize these emotions that become part of our identity. Now, what does that have to do with the quantum model? Our job then, really, our purpose in life is really to begin to look at those emotions that we've memorized, the habits that we've demonstrated, and the attitudes that have become hardwired, and begin to, layer by layer, begin to remove those emotions and those behaviors and those networks of neurons that keep us anchored to the past. And as we begin to remove those layers, then that intelligence that we're connected to begins to move through us. It begins to leak out of us. It begins to consume us. And when that happens, that intelligence, which is both personal and universal, both within you and all around you, it's keeping your heart beating and digesting your food and organizing trillions of functions every single second in your body, this dynamic giver of life begins to move in us. And that's when we become more like it. We become more loving, that's its mind. We become more conscious, that's its mind. We become more giving, that's what it does. The giver of life, we become more willful. It has a very willful consciousness. So our mind becomes its mind, or its mind begins to consume us and become our mind. So our purpose then really is to look at those layers of emotions that keep us from going to the future and say, okay, I had an experience that happened to me 15 years ago, and it has to do with my father, and I'm still carrying this emotion around, and I'm blaming my father for me being this way, and what I'm really saying is I really haven't changed in the last 15 years. When we start to realize that who we are neurologically and emotionally and chemically is really, it's up to us to begin to make those changes, and all of a sudden we start taking responsibility for ourselves, and we forget the event. We just look at the emotions we live by, and when we begin to overcome an emotion, memory without the emotional charge is called wisdom, and that's the name of the game.
Right. I mean, a couple of things. Sometimes these moods that become character traits are so ingrained in us that we no longer see it. It's like a fish in water. And in addition to that, the chemicals that are produced by those moods and character traits become addictive substances to our own physiology. So even if let's say we're an angry person and we're not angry for a day, we're going to start, like you say in What the Bleep, we start to have a withdrawal from those particular chemicals, and then we look for something to get us angry. We know people who love to be angry because that's the emotion they're addicted to. And so some people can't even see those layers that they need to remove. How do you help people in that condition?
Well, this is a great question, because most people, they wait for crisis or trauma or disease or diagnosis or loss. They wait for that moment where they reach their lowest denominator before they really start to look at themselves, and they begin to say, I can't live this way any longer. I can't think this way. I can't make the same choices. These emotions aren't loving to me. Most people wait for that moment where the ego is so bruised that they can't go on business as usual from that point on. And so I think that we can learn and change in a state of pain and suffering, which tends to be the human condition, or we can learn and change in a state of joy and inspiration. And I think the key ingredient is really the hardest part of all of this, the process, really the hardest part is making the time to do it, making the time for our precious selves to shut the computer off, shut the phone off, sit down long enough, and begin to look at the thoughts that are hardwired in our brain that are pretty much happening behind the scenes of our awareness because we're too distracted by everything in our life and our external world, and begin to notice the habits of the body and the things it needs and wants to do, and realize that it doesn't live in the present moment, that it's always anticipating the future moment based on the past moment, and that we're missing really the relaxation into the present moment, and begin to really pay attention to how we feel. And that in neuroscience is called metacognition. It's the new word, the buzzword that's being used that in the contemporary model is mindfulness, but really the word is metacognizant. And the fact that we can think about how we think or notice how we feel or pay attention to what we're doing because of the size of the frontal lobe, it really means that we can modify our behaviors to do a better job in life. And I think one of the things that gets us going is information, is knowledge, because if you're thinking the same way, acting the same way, and feeling the same way, your brain keeps firing in the same sequences, the same patterns, and the same combinations. And whenever you make the brain work a certain way, that's called mind. Mind is the brain in action. So people's signature neurologically, that finite signature ultimately becomes an identity or a personality, and they're thinking in the box. There's no box in the brain, but it's the most commonly fired neurologically wired patterns that really begin to become what we call the person's state of being or identity. Learn a bit of information, make a few new synaptic connections, and think about those everything you learned. Now you're making your brain work in new ways, in new sequences, in new patterns, in new combinations. And whenever you make the brain work differently, that's when you're beginning to change your mind. So the ingredient then that allows us to really step outside of our familiar state of being is learning. And I think we reach a certain point in our life where feelings become the means of thinking, or we stop learning and we live by feelings. And when we get to that point, really, we're pretty much trying to predict the future moment based on how it's going to feel. It doesn't really create any room for the unknown because by very definition, those feelings are records of the past. So we really put ourselves into a very limited state. So I think learning and really shows like this where people can really start to contemplate new possibilities, and What the Bleep was a great way for people to begin to become inspired about, really, I'm at cause of my life. And if I'm living by these emotions, I'm really pushing the genetic buttons that are going to create disease. And so maybe I should start looking at this and realizing my own anger isn't really hurting anybody but myself. And when we start looking at that, just like any addiction, there's going to be a period where the body goes into chaos, because an addiction really is when the body becomes the mind. So now, by the time we're 35, 95% of who we are is a set of memorized behaviors and emotional reactions in which the body subconsciously becomes the mind. And so the person wants to change, and they're using 5% of their conscious mind. They're trying to think positively, but they've been feeling negatively for the last 25 years. Or they're going to create a dream board of their new life, and they're going to put all their conscious intention on that, but they're going to feel guilty or unworthy. That's mind and body in opposition. And we have to begin to recondition the body emotionally to a new mind. And that means we have to give thanks before the experience happens and convince our body emotionally that that future event is happening to us now, because the body's the unconscious mind. It does not know the difference between an experience in your life that creates an emotion you fabricate by thought alone. So if you can teach the body emotionally what that future experience will feel like, that new emotion literally signals new genes in new ways, and your body is literally leaving the past behind. By the same means, every time you revisit a past bitter memory that's tattooed in the recesses of your gray matter, and you bring it to life and you experience the emotion, your body begins to believe that it's in that event. As you begin to forecast some worst-case scenario that could happen sometime in your day, the body of the unconscious mind literally physiologically changes to prepare it for that event. And so it can work for us or it could work against us. It just depends how we're able to regulate our own thoughts.
So if we start to notice these feelings of guilty and unworthiness as we start to come into a new future, a new reality, it's sort of a good sign. It means that the layers are starting to be ripped off so we can start to reveal who we are deeper inside if we don't get into those emotions of guilt or, and shame and fear. If we just notice them, then the new mind can start to emerge out of that, is what you're saying.
Exactly, because if you think about this, if you're observing the thoughts that are connected to your old self or your old state of being, and you're looking at the emotions of guilt, and you're feeling them in your body, but instead of getting up and getting on the computer or calling a friend and complaining or turning on the television, you're going to sit with that emotion and you're going to observe it. The fact that you can observe it means that you're no longer the program. You're no longer the subconscious program. You're actually the consciousness observing the program. Now, this is when we begin to objectify our subjective mind. This is when we become more consciousness, more possibility, and less material atom. This is when we begin to go quantum. This is when we begin to disentangle ourselves from the body, from our circuitry that's a reflection of the environment, and really our concept of time. And the more we do this, the more mindful we are in paying attention to those states and moving ourselves back into the present moment. That's really reconditioning the body to a new mind. And it's uncomfortable. It takes a certain amount of effort, but the rewards of it is something very simple. When we free the body from the emotional chains that have been those addictive states, when the body's freed from its emotional states, that liberation of energy is called joy. The body literally moves into the present moment, and it's freed itself from the past. That's the moment the body reorganizes itself in seconds. And the side effect of that is we begin to liberate energy, and we begin to see possibility that we never saw before because we're no longer viewing reality through the lens of the past, the emotions that we've memorized. And this is when we begin to see things that always existed, new ways of doing things, but we couldn't see them because we were so subconsciously anchored to the past.
So, yeah, as you're talking, I am starting to feel like a rise of energy in my body because what you're saying is creating thoughts of contemplation that are starting to create new possibilities for the future. So I'm really getting it in the body, these possibilities you're talking about there. And I think that's what's so exciting about your work is it creates awareness that we're all unlimited beings. Another aspect of what you said was noticing, becoming the observer of the emotions. Well, in Vipassana meditation, which I did for a 10-day process, you start to observe those old patterns in the body. You just watch them with the breath as they arise as aspects of the mind and, you know, fall away because you've noticed them and you've not engage the chemicals that want to be activated by those feelings. And I think that's a big part of it. And it's, of course, what you say in What the Belief as well, that if you just observe the chemical reactions of the emotions and not indulge them, then they start to dissipate, and then they dissolve, and then they don't have a hold over the body anymore.
Well, this is a really interesting point because the principle in neuroscience says that nerve cells that fire together wire together. But it also says that nerve cells that no longer fire together no longer wire together, which means every time you interrupt that thought or pay attention to an attitude that's connected or hardwired in your brain, and you can become aware of it and not allow the thought to run you, but your observation of it, as you begin to settle down those circuits in your brain, it's tedious in the beginning because it's like riding an unbridled horse. It takes a tremendous amount of effort to settle the mind down. But when we start climbing on top and we are able to regulate inside of us the thoughts we do want to pay attention to and the thoughts we no longer want to give our energy to or our power to, as we begin to get more metacognizant, those circuits no longer fire, and we're literally shutting the lights out in that part of the brain. And every time we do that, we weaken the connection neurologically. And every place where one neuron connects with another neuron is a memory. And it begins to prune away, literally break apart those circuits. You are biologically changing by the same means. If that thought doesn't produce an emotion or a feeling, you're no longer creating a chemical mixture of an emotion of guilt or shame or anger or frustration or unworthiness that's no longer traveling through the bloodstream and signaling the same gene in the same way. And you are literally no longer pushing the genetic button that's causing you to return back to your same self that's headed for a genetic destiny. And what people have to know is that process over time will physically change them and chemically change them to really become somebody else. And that's when that intelligence that gives us life begins to endorse that new state of being, and we begin to feel differently and think differently. And we say, I'm no longer the same person. I know that I'm not the same person because they've stepped out of the circuitry neurologically and the emotions biologically of their past, and they're standing on the precipice of somebody else. And it's absolutely possible to do this. The hardest part of all of it is literally making the time to do it, sitting down and making the time to do it.
Well, and the other hard part, like I think you said before, is noticing what is not. I mean, people don't know that there's a state of joy. They're content in a way. They don't know what's possible. So, I think, you know, being comfortable in a way keeps people stuck as well. They may be happy with who they are, but there are certain traits that are so embedded in their being that they're not aware they're actually patterns of thinking. So I think another difficult part is to even look at the parts of one's life that work to some degree, but we don't know what we don't know is sort of what they used to say in Est, is, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So it's how do we start to train the mind and this metacognitive part of us to be aware of even the good patterns, let's say?
Well, it's true. You don't want to throw everything out. I mean, there's qualities and traits that we all have that have gotten us really to certain points in our life that we should love about ourselves. And I'm not saying that to erase everything. What I am saying is that if we asked ourselves a simple question every morning when we woke up, who do I want to be today? What is the greatest expression of myself that I could live by? What if you said, I'm not going to get up till I am this person? You would have to say that first thing you'd have to do is to remind yourself the thoughts you're not going to think today, the habits you're not going to fall into, and those, you know, emotions that you've memorized that keep you returning back to the same self. So the first process that allows us to make change is to sit down with our eyes closed and eliminate the environment and really start paying attention to who we are. And invariably, we'll run up against our limitations. We'll run up against ourselves. We may experience impatience. We may experience frustration. We may experience a craving, as the Buddhists call it, to do a certain thing or to feel a certain thing. And you may have thoughts of your past. And you, as the quantum observer, or observing your life from the same level of mind, where you will always get the same outcome. You'll organize realities, literally, that will become the blueprints of your destiny. So we have to clear the chalkboard off first that's connected to the old self. And when we make decisions about who we no longer want to be, because we look at those states of mind and body that undermined our greatness, and begin to think about how would greatness think today? How would we act? What would genius feel like? Can I teach my body emotionally what abundance feels like ahead of the experience? Can I give thanks ahead of the actual event, so much so that my body begins to feel like that future experience is happening to me now, because gratitude means the event is done. So we have to really work on elevating ourselves into a new energy, into a new state of being. And when you say, I'm not going to get up until I am this person, you will run up against some aspect of yourself. And if you can change the way you think, and you can plan who you're going to be, and you can teach your body emotionally what it would feel like, once your mind and body are working together, you're in a new state of being. And a new state of being is a new personality, and a new personality creates a new personal reality. And if you did this every day, it would begin to become familiar to you, and it would begin to become easier. And that's exactly what the word meditation means. The word meditation, the Tibetan definition, the symbol means to become familiar with. So as we begin to become familiar with the old self, so much so that we would never let any thought, behavior, or emotion go by subconsciously or unnoticed by us or unconscious, we're so aware of it because we're so familiar with the old self that we would never return back to the old self again. And you begin to fire and wire new thoughts and create new emotions. If you do that enough times, you'll wire new networks in your brain that will become a new mind, and you'll emotionally signal your body, and you'll begin to become familiar with a new state of being. And the more you do it, and the more you move into that new state of being, the purpose of it is so that you, when you get up from your day, you're ahead of your environment. The environment is no longer controlling how you think and feel. You've primed your brain and your body neurologically and emotionally that it's ahead of the environment, it's ahead of time. It's no longer the same body any longer because you've done the work to change it or prime it so that it's ahead of the conditions of your past. Now, if you can maintain that modified state of mind and body your entire day so that nothing removes you from that state of being, hang on, because something different will show up in your life. That's the law. And when you have that event happen in your life and you're surprised, overjoyed, and excited that it actually happened, you'll believe in that more, and that's called empowerment. And that's really what this what this time in history is about, is becoming more empowered.
It's a great description of ways of being. In what you're saying, any state that is not joy, that is not the total fulfillment and elation of one's being, it can be considered a pattern of the past. That's the ultimate. So when we're in the state of joy, then we are embracing the unknown, and we're, in a sense, wiring the field for unlimited potential.
There's not a lot of support in society right now to do this. I mean, most people confuse joy and pleasure. They're not the same thing. Pleasure is when you do something that makes you feel good. And when you start getting hooked on looking for things that feel good and staying away from things that feel bad, sooner or later you'll be addicted to something, because the pleasure centers in your brain will be recalibrated to a higher level, and the receptor sites will require more of those pleasure chemicals to get the same feeling. So we'll knock ourselves out of balance. Joy is when you've broken through yourself, where you are sitting there and your body's raging and your mind is out of control and you're working on bringing it back to the present moment, and sooner or later there's a release of energy. Something happens, and when that release happens and you feel something move in you and you feel overjoyed from something coming from inside of you, that's when all of a sudden there's nothing outside of you that could make that feeling go away. That's when you're getting close. So there's not a lot of support in our culture, because everybody's busy, they have kids, they have schedules, they have computer emails, they have meetings, and really setting aside time to really begin this inward process is really the art. And when we do make the time and we do have those transformations, the end product of this is called self-love. This is when we begin to overcome right on the other side of our anger is compassion. Right on the other side of our fear is courage. Right on the other side of our unworthiness is real self-confidence. It's just the same energy. It's just trapped in the body. And we can work with that and really make some type of change. This is when the person, when they break through and they feel liberated in some way, and they push themselves a little further than they would normally go. That's called self-love. They have a respect for themselves and a respect for all of life. And you can sit in the presence of people that normally pushed your buttons, but they don't push your buttons anymore because you overcame that emotion and you're free now. That's the beauty behind this all, because now you're no longer entangled to your familiar environment any longer. You're ahead of it.
Yeah, and I think this is why your workshops have been so popular. Your two books, Evolve Your Brain, The Science of Changing Your Mind, and this latest one, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, How to Lose One's Mind and Create a New One. That's why they've been so popular, because you are giving, or you're pointing out the technology that we have innately in our own neurobiochemistry. It's like, you know, and so I'm looking at the technology around me, and it really can compare to the physiology and the inner technologies we have to evolve our minds to become the unlimited being, but we haven't had an instruction book of how to use our vehicle to overcome our limitations, and I think this is what you're doing.
Thank you. I hope I can contribute in some way. I really worked on having Breaking the Habit being very simple and really within everybody's reach, that they understand it both scientifically and philosophically, but it's not enough to stop there, to really inspire people to really try it out and see if they can produce some result in their life and become a scientist in their lives. Like, wow, I've done this. I've taken the time out of my day to change something about me. I need a sign from the universe to let me know that it's observing me and paying attention to me so that I know it's real. Now, when you start having those synchronicities and those signs, that's really when you start waking up, because now you're engaged in life. You're no longer dreading something bad happening to you, or not, you know, dreading your day or getting prepared for the same situation. But you're open to possibility, and that's when the universe begins to work in our favor, and we begin to believe that the universe works in our favor.
Well, and just to tell people, this is not just theory, because there is a little clip on YouTube where you actually talk about some practical examples. Can you just give a few what you've witnessed personally as far as this physical, mental, emotional transformation?
God, we've had so many in the last 2 years, Alan, so many people who took the time to do their meditations every morning and overcame health conditions, physical pain in their body, MS, diabetes, lupus, rare genetic disorders, win the lottery. We've had so many amazing things happen. And, here's an example. We had a woman just a few months ago who was diagnosed with Hashimoto's syndrome, which is a thyroid condition. And she's a 36-year-old female, was living in some difficult conditions. She ended a relationship that was abusive. She wasn't feeling well. She went to the doctor. The doctor said, look, you have this thyroid condition, and you're going to need to take medication for the rest of your life. Now, she understood that the emotions of unworthiness and the emotions of fear and a lot of her anger and self-worth were signaling the gene and creating that condition, because it's a scientific fact that the hormones of stress dysregulate and downregulate genes and create disease. And she had gone to our level one event, and she began to understand that she was living by these emotions that were defining her, and every time she thought about her past experience, or any time those emotions came up, she was really driving her body further into her genetic destiny. And she spent months working on creating a new state of mind and body. She became somebody else. She moved into a new personality, and every day she got up in a state of gratitude. And instead of living by resentment and guilt and pain and unworthiness, she was living by a state of gratitude to be alive, and she worked on that until it became a new state of being. And she knew one moment that she was better, and she walked back into the doctor's office, and they did the blood tests on her. They had to do it twice because they didn't believe that her blood values were normal. No medications, no nothing, and she's a different person. A different personality creates a different personal reality, and that disease no longer exists in her body any longer. And I just saw her just last month in Phoenix while I was doing a talk at the Science of Golf conference, and she came as my guest, and she said, "Boy, I'm so happy that I really did it. I took the time for myself to do it. It was so worth it. I had to come up against my demons and my limitations, but I'm a really happy person today, and I love myself." And I said, "That is the greatest compliment you could ever give me. The greatest compliment you could ever give me is that you say, I actually tried it out, and it worked." That's the feedback that I love to hear to let me know that I'm making a difference. So we've had numerous situations where people have done pretty miraculous things.
Well, and congratulations, because somehow you've just made it easy to uncover the key to acknowledging our own being. But let me ask you another question that I'm trying to integrate. So the field, the quantum field exists, and that is being, well, this question I'm trying to formulate, is it being programmed by the intention that's involved in the neurochemistry that we project into the field, and does the field then create the situations? It seems like the field is the big encompassing envelope that we fit in. So as we're emanating a certain vibration into the field, we're pulling that vibration towards us. So, in a sense, the neurons become an extension into the field itself. So there's no separation between the inner being and the outer being. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think, though, to simplify it really, is what I say is when you change your energy, you change your life. Now, there was an experiment done where they took a group of people that were expert prayers that really were able to produce some pretty remarkable results. And they had vials of DNA out in front of them, and they said to these people, with all of your intention, now, intention is just getting clear on what you want. They said, "Oh, with all of your intention, with your mind, we want you to see this DNA either winding or unwinding, and keep doing the experiment." Now, at the end of the experiment, they found that intention did absolutely nothing to change the matter, change the DNA. So then they said, "Okay, we want you to move into an elevated emotion. We want you to feel joy. We want you to feel goodwill. We want you to feel gratitude, and we want you to emulate this emotion or emanate this emotion out into the quantum field." And the people did it over and over again, and when they checked the DNA, the DNA did absolutely nothing. There was no response to the elevated emotion. But when they said to these people, "Now, we want you to get very clear on the DNA unwinding or winding, and we want you to move into the feeling of how it would feel if the DNA unwound. In other words, give thanks ahead of the experience." When they did that, 25% of the DNA unwound. You see, the thoughts that we think are the electrical charge in the quantum field, and the feelings that we emote are the magnetic charge in the quantum field. And how we think and how we feel broadcasts an electromagnetic signature that influences every single atom in our life. So from a perspective of electromagnetism, we're always broadcasting something. Now, what we're broadcasting into the airwaves of the invisible is what we really want to experience at some future time. You see, we're not punished for our sins, we're punished by our sins, which means if you're walking around feeling frustrated and angry, then you are broadcasting a signature into the field, and the field will organize events in your life equal to how you're creating a good reason to feel angry or frustrated. So the field is an objective field, and when we broadcast a signature and we keep thinking the same thoughts neurologically and we keep feeling the same emotions in the body, then when our mind and body are working together, we're in a state of being, and the quantum field responds to who we're being. Not what we're thinking, not what we're feeling, but the combination of how we think and feel, or what we call a state of being.
So that's it. The person we are is what we're attracting to us. So the key, I think, was, and I think we have to reinforce it, I feel like it's so important, to give thanks, gratitude ahead of the experience as if it had already happened. I think that, for me, really resonated with the key to unlocking future potentials.
Right. Well, I love the idea of gratitude, because the emotional signature of gratitude, most people are conditioned into believing that they need a reason to give thanks, or they need a reason to feel joy. That's cause and effect. That's the Newtonian model of reality. Quantum model of reality says give thanks ahead of the actual experience, so much so that you convince your body emotionally that that future event is happening to you now in the present moment. And when that happens, you're broadcasting a signal that it's already done. Then your job is just to get up and live as if your prayers were already answered, not try to figure out how it's going to happen, because the moment we start analyzing, we've returned back to the old mind.
Right. So that is so key. So we're actually conditioning the field to be the future we're because it then, like you say, the mind doesn't know what's the difference between the past, the present, and the future. By giving thanks or gratitude to something that we're intending, or not even intending, but feeling, as I think there's a line by Jesus, go and work as if it's already done. Isn't there something in the Bible about that? Isn't there a key?
Yeah, he basically says, you know, give thanks ahead of the experience. So that takes an enormous amount of trust, because it means you have to abandon the idea of defining your reality through your senses. You have to get beyond your senses and believe in the invisible more than the feedback that's coming through your senses. And that isn't something that we can just do in one day. It takes a little practice, it takes a lot of contemplation, and it takes making an effort to embark on that journey, because gosh darn it, it's so common to talk about this and it sounds really good, but making the effort to do it and then giving thanks, you look almost foolhardy and insane, because anything that happens that's miraculous is outside of convention, it's outside of beliefs, and people who pulled off miraculous things in history were always considered a little bit crazy in the beginning until they pulled it off, and then once they were able to change the course of history, then they were considered a master or a holy man or a holy woman or a saint or a genius, because they were ahead of their time. And so stepping outside into that unknown area, it really takes quite a bit of courage, and it takes quite a bit of sustained state, and we have to be willing to make the effort.
Sustained state of focus. I mean, focus, intention, because we've been so conditioned to believe the world is the way we think it is. So I think the hours and hours of focus and inner intention is what we need to start to recondition. I mean, is that what you're talking about? I mean,
absolutely. It's maintaining a modified state, and that kind of belief that I'm talking about, or that kind of perception, is really a modified state of being. It's really sustaining a state of being somebody else. And instead of really trying to force the outcome or push the outcome because we feel separate from possibility, we live the majority of our life as materialists, because that's what the hormones of stress do, that they cause us to focus on our bodies, focus on things in our environment, and focus on time. That's how you're able to survive in threatening situations. But in that creative state where you're an immaterialist, you're focusing on possibility, not focusing on the particle, you're focusing on the wave, you're focusing on a future that exists as a potential, and you're in an elevated emotion, you're feeling gratitude, or you're feeling joy, you feel connected to something greater, and you're not defining your reality or yourself as a body in the environment in linear time. You're greater than that. You're nobody, you're no thing, you're no time. You're in a selfless state instead of a selfish state. And in that selfless state, where you are connected to possibilities, you would never really try to force the outcome, because forcing the outcome causes you to return back to that materialist again. You trust in that outcome, and you live in that state of trust, and that's when you start to have what faith is all about, which is believing in thought more than anything else. And again, this is a practice that you make room for the unknown to show up in your life.
When you say practice, do you take 1 hour a day, 2 hours? I mean, what you suggest?
Well, you know, I mean, it's equal to the person's ambition. I would be happy if people took 20 minutes, but an hour a day to move into the present moment and begin to move inward. So many times people have said it's way better than my workout, because when I get up, I feel so connected and I feel so poised and so spontaneous and so creative, and I'm not reacting as the same person any longer. Well, to the body, just to the body, it's freedom to the body, because the hormones of stress that are actually knocking the brain and body out of balance are being regulated greater, and so the person moves into a better level of health. So, and you know, half an hour to an hour, it's up to the person. That we have the downloads for the meditation on the website from the book that people have been downloading that allows them to go to hear my voice, take them through the step by step process. Also,
the website is Dr. Joe Dispenza, DrJoeDispenza.com. I mean, just I think we're almost out of time, but you know, I mean, the stories you tell in the book and the evidence of your wider exposure seems like it's not just philosophy again. It's worked in your life. Do you have any comment about your own process in what we've been talking about?
Sure. I mean, I wake up every morning and I ask myself the same question. What is the greatest expression or example or state of being that I can be today? And let me decide who I want to be and who I no longer want to be, and I'm not going to get up until I am this person. And when I connect that invisible field of potentials, and I get up and I'm different than when I would have gotten up as my normal self, brushing my teeth, you know, wearing the same, you know, dressing the same way, showering the same way, driving to work the same way, my identity is being reinforced by my external environment. When I get up as somebody else, I think everybody benefits in my life from it. First me, and then my family, and then the people that serve and work with me, and then ultimately my community. So I think that if everybody made these efforts, you know, the world would be a different place, because we wouldn't really be living by those emotions that drive us down to our humanity, because those emotions really are the altered state of consciousness. The true state of consciousness, normal state of consciousness, is the states of joy and inspiration that mystics and poets have talked about. And the altered states are anger and aggression and fear and anxiety and depression. Now, we just believe that that's normal. It's not.
Well, does it make you, I don't know, sad or not that it would affect you that way, but this, to walk around and meet so many people and see so many people in the world that are running by those emotions in such a fearful, addictive environment, and to see that the potential for change is right there. I mean, how do you feel that more people aren't acting on this, and the world is being run by these addictive feelings?
Well, it's a great time in history to be alive, Alan. I feel very fortunate and very thankful that on the smallest scale or the largest scale that I get to contribute in. And I think there's a strong intellectual division going on right now. I think that because of information, so many of the models are breaking down. The medical model, the environment, the religious model, the political model, the economic model, the educational model, they're all breaking down because people are seeing through the illusion. Nobody is any longer an authority. Everybody has the opportunity to learn right now. And because of that, I'm happy to say that so many people are waking up and so many people want to know answers to questions and really are no longer ensnared by fame or popularity or corporations or consumerism. They really want to find peace and joy within them. And so there's a division going on. And that division, I think, is greater than it's ever been. It used to be a small percentage. And hopefully by you doing a show like this or people continuing to inspire others, that there'll be a shift in the consciousness of the planet to that selfish model, service to self, to finally an open, you know, selfless model where we serve others, and when we make choices, we consider the whole. So I'm happy to say that no matter where I go in the world, that people want to know, and they want to know how.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's an amazing time of change. It's when people are waking up. And so what could we see if this was a future where everyone lived on this level of joy or wonder, or what people have called super consciousness? How do you see a society where people are that? I mean, just kind of imagine what you see as possible for our collective.
Well, there would be no, we would know the true history of this planet. We would know scientific inventions for diseases, creations for energy that certainly supersede what we're given, and corporations wouldn't be running the world or the government. People would be really interested, truly interested, in the growth and the evolution of a species as a whole, and we would be really looking at new ways to sustain life and be working together in cooperation instead of competition in that selfish model. And so we would probably have certainly contact with other cultures, and we would certainly be interested in traveling in different dimensions at different times. And I think the biggest lie we've ever been told is that we're linear beings living a linear life. So truly, we are dimensional beings. So even if we just got to the point where we were serving others, and when we made the choices as a community of people on this planet, we were looking at ways for growth and invention, we would certainly be in a different place than we are today. And I feel very strongly that we're headed in that direction.
Me too. And just as you mentioned multidimensionality, it's we have the neurochemistry to create those realities and shift the quantum field to be that. It must be.
Yeah, and you know, this is just not a time, you know, to talk about peace. I mean, you can't talk about peace and be in conflict with your neighbor. You can't talk about, greed of governments and not give. We have to demonstrate everything we want to see happen in the world. So great time in history to be alive, because if you want peace, you better have peace within you and all around you. And that's the greatest way to instill change, because you're giving people permission to do the same. We're giving people, by example, to give them permission to, instead of knee-jerk in the same way, to actually make another choice.
Yeah, and thank you for your work, because you're grounding this change in the body, in the neurochemistry that creates our perception every single moment of the day. And so this is an important piece, what you're providing. So.
Well, thank you, Alan. I feel like it's a privilege.
Yeah. So any final words about breaking the habit of being yourself?
People want to know about the workshops that I do around the country or around the world. They can visit the website. I'll be in Oslo, Switzerland, and in Colorado and Phoenix. I travel pretty much consistently. So if people are interested in the workshop, they can just go to the website.
The website, again, is drjoedispenza.com. Joe's latest book is called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One. It's number one on the self-help on Amazon. Congratulations on that. Congratulations on all the success, because it's successful because what you're saying people resonate with, and there is a big movement for change. So, Next time you're in New York, I'd love to set up a workshop for you, or at least an evening. We'll do that, okay?
Okay, I'll take you up on that.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Joe, for everything, and I appreciate all the work over the years, and we'll be in touch anyway, okay?
Thank you so much, Alan. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, too. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and we've just been listening to Dr. Joe Dispenza, who's really outlined a program to create that, a whole technology that we have inside of us to create new realities, to go into the unknown, to live in joy and wonder, which is our human destiny. So thanks for listening, and listen again to this program and read the books that Joe's written, Evolve Your Brain, The Science of Changing Your Mind, and Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@grizzly.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening.
Waking up in the middle of my life. Nothing's what it seems. Feel the fire. Come alive. Feel the fire.
In the fire.
Come alive.
In the fire.